Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for April 14th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and sitting in with me this week is our very special guest host, Patrick Newman, the NBB tracker. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on the show. Jim is out this week. He had a little procedure to correct some breathing, and he'll be back next week. He was going to try to do the show, but he decided that he wanted to rest, and I think that was a good idea. Good call, Jim. Take care of yourself.
Wish him a speed recovery.
Yep, well, he'll be back. He's already fine. He was emailing me today, and he got out of the hospital today, so he'll be giving us great information next week. On this week's show, we've got an interview with the Yakult Swallows outfielder Lastings Millage, and we're going to discuss the latest news with the ball and a few other topics, so let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, before we get started, Patrick, I'm going to give you this week's trivia question.
Okay, fire away.
Now, I know you probably are, this is up your alley because it's statistics-based and it's something that you could probably name off the top of your head, but it is kind of a tough call.
Okay, you're making me nervous, but let's look at it.
All right, I have a list of five players combined in both leagues of the guys with the highest percentage of infield singles. I'm just asking you to name three of the five.
Of current players?
Current players.
And is this season or last season?
This is from last season.
And it's the highest percentage of their hits, right? So not like overall number of infield singles.
Right, the highest number of their hits, how many were infield singles?
Okay, Shohei Arunami.
He is not on the list.
Okay, how about Uemoto from Hanshin?
He is not on the list.
All right. How about Uchimura? Also from Hanshin. Or not from DeNA, Yokohama.
He is not on the list.
No? Okay. Honda, SoftBank.
He also is not on the list.
Yeah, these guys must be too good or something. Not good enough. What about Kataoka?
Kataoka? Wow. I don't even think he's that fast. He is not on the list.
He used to be fast.
We're talking about last year.
Yeah, so...
I didn't think it'd be this hard for you.
Well, see, I have lots of ideas.
I have lots of ideas.
I'm thinking of the fast guys that bunt a lot. What about Yo from... he gets too many hits overall.
Yeah.
Yo can't be on the list.
He's not on the list.
Give me two more tries. I want to see if I can get at least somebody. Sakamoto from Oryx. He had a bad year last year, though.
Sakaguchi?
Sakaguchi, yes, Sakaguchi.
No, he is not on the list.
Yeah, okay. What about, is there anybody from Hiroshima on the list?
yes. Ryosuke Kikuchi was number four in the Central League, and he is number five overall. All right, I'm gonna call the
Oshima. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm calling. Yes, Yohei Oshima. From the Chunichi
Oshima.
Dragons. He is number one.
So I got two, and I was supposed to get three. So
that's
okay.
Close.
Who are the other guys?
Ishikawa from the Yokohama Bay Stars at 15.9%, and then Kazuya Fujita of the Rakuten Eagles. Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking of him actually. And who is the other one?
Yamato Maeda of the Hanshin Tigers.
Oh, okay. It was Maeda. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And honorable mention goes to Yo Hijirisawa of the Eagles, who was at 13%.
That's another good one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. I'm surprised because I tried to base it because I knew you were going to be on the show and I wanted to do something interesting and statistic based for you. And, you were close though. I mean, you named some fast guys.
I'm disappointed in myself. I'm going to have to raise the bar for the next one.
Okay. All right, so this past week on Tuesday, I happened to be in Nagoya, and I went out to Nagoya Dome and caught up with Lastings Millage. And it was, I guess, on Saturday here in Japan, Saturday here in Japan, that we found out that he was sent out to the farm team. And I didn't read about any injuries or anything, so I have to assume that, and just, it wasn't because he was hitting 231 in 10 games. I don't think they'd send him down to the farm for that. It's too early in the season. But I know that he didn't play in a game, and then the next day he was sent down. So I'm assuming And I had a chance to talk to one of the swallows I caught up with actually this past weekend, but I forgot to ask. I was just wondering, he probably wouldn't have told me anyway, but I was wondering if something happened, like a blow-up with Last Things, because he didn't get to play. But they brought up Orlando Roman, a pitcher, a right-handed pitcher, and because of the limit on foreign players, they sent Last Things down to the farm. I don't get it. I don't understand why. Like I said, I think there has to be some other reason. So maybe he either said something or did something, or maybe there is some nagging injury that we don't know about. But like I said, he didn't play in that first game in Yokohama and then down to the farm. So anyway, let's take a listen to what he had to say on Tuesday from Nagoya Dome.
All right, our guest this week is Last Things Millage. He's back. He's looking good so far. How you feeling, buddy?
Feel good. Everything's going good. You know, getting back out on the field, getting in the swing of things. Season started, and after a hard spring training, you know, you get the season as a reward. So, you know, we're just trying to get in the swing of things and get used to playing every day.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on the show, and just tell me how you're feeling physically, and tell me about that injury from last year. How do you feel?
Right now, I feel good. You know, I did take five, six months off, and actually it was about 6.5 months before I played my first game since I got hurt. But you know, right now, you know, I feel like I picked up where I left off physically wise. You know, being able to play every day, and you know, being 100%. So,
what exactly was the injury?
The injury was a ligament in my left ankle. So, you know, I'm not as disappointed, you know, with the injury, because I went hard after a ball. It's different from getting injured with pre-existing injuries such as a hamstring or a back or other things like that, which are injuries.
Chronic.
Yeah, can keep coming back, but you know, it's just an injury of playing the game hard, and I can deal with that.
I saw it. I was cringing. It must have felt terrible, but I expected you back.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing about it, it was just going to be too much work. You know, it was a 7.5 week injury for me to be 100%, and then, you know, being two months off, and then I wouldn't need like 15-20 ABs to come back for five games. It really didn't kind of make sense. So we just, I have a contract for the next 2 years after this year. So the most important part was to get healthy and to come back 100% like I am right now.
Okay. All right. Well, tell me what it was like being on the sidelines when Coco was having such a great year last year.
I think it was a good thing. It was also good for the league. You know, you see so many different guys chasing after the record and being stopped. I think it was actually a good thing to see to not only see a foreigner break it, but to see somebody come and break records is just good. Records are meant to be broken, and he knows that. But it's just good. It's just always good to make history, you know. No matter if you're foreigner, no matter what you are, it's just always good to make history. And that was awesome.
Did you guys keep in contact during that time?
Yeah, we kept in contact in the off season.
During the season.
Yeah, we did.
Even though you weren't around.
Yeah, we did, and you know, I told him, don't worry about it. You're gonna break it. You don't even have to worry about it or anything like that. And he was dealing with, you know, with some injuries too. He played pretty much a whole season last year. So you know, and yeah, so you know, all around, it was just a good season for him. You know, he hit the ball. He did everything offensively that you can ask for and more.
Now, did people pepper you with questions about Masahiro Tanaka? Because they certainly pepper us.
No, not really. They really didn't ask too much. Because I guess because we're in a different league, so we only seen him like one time. So, but all in all, I know he's a good pitcher. He's gonna have success in the big leagues. He's a big league pitcher, and you know, I wish him nothing but the best. And I know he's gonna have a good career. So,
all right. Now, Tateyama is already injured. We know that. Well, we don't know that he's already injured, but he's slowly coming back. We don't know what the situation is. I know there was a meeting today about him, and then Tony Barnett is out. Why have the injuries ravaged this team? Is it not enough training, overtraining? Is there a reason?
No, I mean, I think it's always to each individual, you know. You know, some guys are a little bit older. Some guys train a little bit harder in the off season. Some guys don't train as much as they need to. So it's not so much as a trainer aspect or blaming a trainer or blaming a strength and conditioning coach for injuries, because injuries happen. We play 144 games. So injuries and nagging injuries and big-time injuries are going to happen regardless of what team. So the thing about it is you just kind of cross your fingers and you just go and play the game as hard as you can, and whatever happens, happens. But it's nobody. You can't point the finger at one person. You know, these things are happening. It's not going to be the first time, and it's not going to be the last time that injuries are going to happen. They're going to happen. So, you know, the best thing we can do is just keep playing hard, keep preparing ourselves day in and day out, and, you know, deal with whatever's thrown at us.
All right, you come out of spring. Do you know what your team is, or does it take you a little while to evaluate what the team is as you go through the season? Because there's some new faces and some guys come back in different shape and all that kind of stuff. How do you go about evaluating the team?
I think as of right now, we're a team where we have to play good and get confidence. And that's not a secret. I think that, you know, our play on the field is going to determine how we feel confident-wise, because we have a lot of young guys. We have not young guys age-wise, but young guys playing every day, taking on the everyday role. So I think, you know, our identity is going to be made by our play on the field. If we don't play, if we don't start out well, then it's going to be harder for us to come back. If we start out well, then we're going to have confidence. And, you know, especially from being a last place team, and it's no secret that when you're a last place team, you got to come out and you got to win some games right away. And otherwise, you're going to fall into the same, oh my gosh, here we go again. Same thing as last year. And it's really easy to do. And, you know, like I said before, we have to come out, we have to establish our identity early. We have to win games, and we have to get confident, you know, for us to get deep in the playoffs this year.
Well, so given that, how do you feel about the team at the moment, and what do you see going forward?
I think we're doing some great things. I think that we're scoring runs. That's the number one thing. Our pitching is going to be there. I'm not worried about our pitching. You know, and even though the last couple games could have been better on both sides of the ball, even though we scored runs, but we could have scored some more runs, and you know, I'm part of that. I could have drove in guys. I had a couple of three opportunities to drive guys in, less than two outs, and got on third, and I didn't come through. But that's going to happen. But you know, I think I have real confidence in our pitching, that our pitching is going to be there. Our main focus is going to be scoring runs. That's where we struggle, and it's no secret. And as long as we score runs, our pitching in the end is going to be there.
Well, saying that, you guys are coming off of this wild series that you had with Hanshi. Now, how should fans view that series? Should they be worried? Should they be encouraged?
I don't think.
Be fans of both teams.
I don't think anybody should be worried. The main fact that at the end of the day, we won the series. At the end of the day, and if you win every series, hey, we in a good position at the end of the year. So I don't care if we win 100-99. We get the win. By any means necessary, we have to get the win, and that's what we did in that Hanshin series after coming and struggling against Hiroshima. And you know, that's just what we have to do. We just have to win games. We don't care how we win games. We'll win ugly games. We don't care, and I'm pretty sure the management don't care how we win games. We win games, we're going to be okay.
All right, I got that. Smooth over it, but I still think it was too wild. I know that you don't like interleague play. How would you change it if you could?
I think the interleague needs to be three straight days. You know, the 2 days and off a day for rain. I'm not a big fan of that because you prolong the season. This is a game. This is a game where we play every day. It's not as physical as the other sports. It's not as physical as basketball. It's not as physical as soccer, and it's not as physical as football, American football. So that being said, this game is meant to be played every single day. And we know the double hitters are not going to happen in this country. It's just not even worth even talking about. But you usually may get two a month. So why not plug those in? Why not plug those in on an off day? When we rain out, we rain out. We don't come to the field and practice. It's a day off. So, and usually they bang the game early in this country, other like in the States. So they let you pretty much know when you're in bed. And so that'll be a day off, and then you plug that game in on Monday, and you keep the season going. So you don't have an extra week and a half after the season after you play every day. And even though you only played 138 games maybe, but still, that still feels like once you still played over 160 games, including exhibition and spring training. So I definitely think that it needs to be three games, and then whatever, just regardless of the whole interleague, I think it needs to be for the season too. You get a rainout game, you plug it in, you make it. You can still have the rainout week at the end if it rains a lot. But I definitely think I'm a strong believer in they need to plug those games in on the off days on Monday. So, sometimes we have 2 days off a week. So, it's plenty of time, and there's no excuse for us to have a week and a half rain week at the end of the season, and also a 5-day rain week in May. It is, maybe I'm just not used to it, or these guys used to it, but this the way the game is supposed to be played. We're supposed to play every day, and at the end of 144 days, it's time to either be playing baseball or time to be resting.
All right, so does that mean you would expand the interleague play to where they have three-game series and three-game series instead of the two-game series?
Well, in my opinion, really doesn't matter. But if it was up to me, I wouldn't even have an interleague. I'll just have I have two teams.
No interleague.
I just have two teams play mix and match. This is Japan. It's barely bigger than Florida. So you can go from Hiroshima to Fukuoka easy. It's not like the United States.
One league with all 12 teams.
Every day you have interleague, or you mix and match. Maybe one day a week you have an interleague, or even a couple times you have interleague games throughout the whole year, rather than having 1 month specifically interleague, because that kind of messes up. It kind of messes up your plan, because you don't see those guys, and playing those guys make absolutely no sense, because you can only play one team at the end of the year anyway, even if you get to the Japan series. So playing the other league, it really don't make sense to me having an interleague month. I think that it'll be better and make more sense if 1 week you have an interleague series, and then you have two a month. And then you make up the games like that throughout the whole season, or you have two teams out of each division have a series. It can be done, because you've seen it's being done at the major league level. It can be done, and those guys travel 6 and 7 hours flying. The longest trip flying here is hour 45, so it can be done. you know. So if it was, like I say, my opinion doesn't matter, and my opinion
sure
is very small.
Sure, your opinion matters, man. Speak up.
But if it was up to me, I wouldn't. It doesn't make sense to have. Doesn't make sense to have
the interleague session.
The interleague session.
Okay, but you would play against.
But
the
definitely, it's definitely good to mix and match because you only have 12 teams
right.
here. So it's definitely good to mix and match and see other teams and things like that. But I don't know about a whole month, and I don't know about playing on Monday and Tuesday and off Wednesday, playing Thursday or Friday, off Saturday and off Monday. I don't know. I don't know if I'm a fan of that.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate it. Have good luck and good health this season, and we'll see you at the end, huh?
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much again, Last Things, and we hope to see you soon back up on the first team. So, Patrick, I know you enjoyed this discussion because you said you listened to it a couple times. So what are your thoughts on the discussion?
Well, he was all business. He's right about having a young team and kind of taking some time to know what you got and wanting to put a few wins on the board. So I kind of agree with him on sort of the minor injury bug that's hit you cold. It's going to happen with guys that are a little bit older, a little bit more experienced. And you know, he's obviously he got sent down, but he's a valuable asset to the team, and I'm sure he'll be back and have another good year.
Yeah, we did get news later on. In fact, I mentioned it in the discussion with Last Things that Shohei Tateyama, their ace. That day they were actually going to have a press meeting or a discussion in front of the media or with the media, members of the media, to talk about what happened. And that day he was supposed to throw in a minor league game, and he threw one or two pitches and just pulled the plug on himself. And then we found out later that he has retorn the ligament in his elbow, and he's going to have surgery, and he's 33, and this really doesn't look good for a guy at 33. Most of the guys we hear about in the States who are having Tommy John surgery or something are in their 20s anyway.
So Tateyama actually had Tommy John early in his career when he was 24, I think. And so he's come back successfully from that and had a really good career since then. But obviously coming back from the second one is even worse. And, this is a huge setback for him, so you have to wonder if that's going to be it for his career.
Yeah, I started to wonder whether they actually tried to rush him back a little bit because they finished in last place, and you heard the concern the way Last Things Millage was talking about in the interview, saying, hey, look, we are a last place team. We need to come out and start winning right away and establish a confidence factor. And I think they wanted him to be back at the beginning of the season, and I think at 33 probably they needed to slow that process down until he was 100%, and they probably didn't. And then we also got news that their captain, Ryosuke Morioka, who was hitting above 500, and he's out with a torn rib cage muscle, and they said maybe a month, maybe a little bit longer for him. Tony Barnett, we know, injured his left knee. He's got a torn ligament there. He's going to be out for the season. So they've already been hit this year. They were decimated the year before and crushed the year before that. So this is going into the third plus year of the team suffering incredible damage from injuries. And they have enough guys to go out there on the field and compete, but they don't have enough to win long term. And it really has to concern that obviously was the motivation for that question from me about the injuries. But, I mean, you can't prepare for some of the things that are happening to these guys.
Well, this is why depth is so important, in a baseball team. It's a long season. It's 144 games in Japan. Plus another really good point Last Things made was that it's over 160 games because you have the month of exhibition games plus the spring training and all that.
Right.
And it's really dragged out over a long period of time as well, which is something you hear from a lot of the foreign players, and Last Things echoed that as well. So, you know, I mean, it's maybe an unfair comparison, but if you look at a team like Yomi Uri, who just stacks their rotation and stacks their bench with good caliber players, obviously that's a huge advantage for them.
Right, and now SoftBank is doing the same, and so are the Eagles in a way.
Yeah, so that's really, it's more of a lesson for the front offices, I think, than the players. I mean, a guy like Last Things and the remaining pitchers and Yakult can only go out and perform, but it's important to stack the rosters with good, competent guys that at least have skills in enough areas to kind of keep things afloat.
Right, right. So, yeah, now I also loved his take on Interleague, and I had talked to him about that in, I think it was 2012, and then I didn't get a chance to ask him about it last year, so I wanted to bring that up. And I loved the concept that he had of a, instead of a one-month Interleague session with a winner, which I liked. I mean, I really liked that aspect of Interleague, is having all the teams play at the same time with a limited time on it and then proclaim a winner. You know, I'd like to see them do that in the U.S. if they could, but they don't, it's, you know, the leagues are too large. So that concept is something unique to Japan. It's really good. But, you know, like you said, have the games spread out throughout the year, have a weekend, like a interleague weekend every month or something, and get those games in that way. And you can have the three games, you can work them into the schedule, and like you said, play on Mondays if need be during that particular time. I think that was great. You know, it'd be nice to break up the monotony. I think maybe between May and September, or May and August, the end of August, that'd be a really good thing to do. And then September and October, you just get back to league play and do it that way. It's a great concept. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I agree with that. So in the major leagues, they used to do a month of interleague as well when it first started.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to change that last year because they moved Houston to the American League. Mm-hmm. So they have an odd number of teams in each league now. So you if you didn't do interleague every day, you'd have two teams sitting every night. So it wouldn't work.
Right.
So I think the having it in a month is kind of the marketing kind of novelty aspect of it at this point. And it's still fairly new to Japan. And so it's still a bit of a novelty, but I definitely think it would be better to spread it out over the course of the year and play the games in a more normal kind of context. Well, the other thing about your idea is that if you have these series on the weekend, you can kind of play up sort of the natural rivalries a little bit more. Like Hanshin and Oryx, for example,
right?
And they're both local teams, Fukuoka, SoftBank Hawks, and Hiroshima are both in the same region,
mm-hmm.
and so you could play those up with the local fans and kind of market those a little bit as being not so much interleague, but the specific rivalry to the local fan base. And
right.
I think that would be better.
Right, that particular matchup would be the Kansai Derby, and yeah, that would be really nice. And there's lots of ways that they could market it. I also like the idea of maybe having 4-2 situations where you have four league games and then one interleague, two interleague matchups and you split that and you can have a rotation of that. There's lots of things that they could do. It's just that
they're
not very creative.
Yeah, there's not so many incentives to kind of, manage the schedule more efficiently or more creatively. I think as an observer, you know, the week off in the middle of the year for interleague rainouts and then just the dragging on at the end is kind of frustrating. It'd be better to have games every day and do away with those gaps. So I'm with them 100% on that.
I'm with you because sometimes with those gaps, teams are able to bring pitchers back who normally wouldn't be able to pitch if you were on an everyday or in an everyday situation, and they can bring them back a little bit early to pitch some of those games. So it's kind of an unfair advantage for the teams that have days off that are playing teams that don't necessarily have days off. So I also liked what he said about, I liked a lot of what he said, but essentially I think he was saying his team needs to produce on offense that they're pitching. You know, he said that they're pitching, or he wasn't going to worry about their pitching, and that was alarming to me because if he's not worried about the pitching, I'll worry about the pitching for him. That horrible series, and I guess it was very entertaining, but for pitchers, it was a horrible series for pitchers the past weekend when they played Hanshin and had all the runs. And then now we know that Tateyama's not coming back, and you've got Ryan Ogawa who is pitching well for them, but he's the only one who's really been consistent on the mound. And that's a real issue for me. And he said, you know, winning and confidence would be established if they could win some games early, which they're not. But I guess it's good to play Yokohama. That can help some teams
catch
win
that. Yeah, there a little bit.
But it sounded like he was trying to put the pressure on the offense to try to save the defense to me.
Yeah, there's definitely an element of that. Since they have the makings of a competitive lineup, you know, they have some guys that can get on base like Yamada and Kawabata. And they have, obviously Coco, who's going to hit a billion home runs, and last innings is pretty good too. So, you know, they have some good parts there, Aikawa. The pitching is obviously, you know, the strength of Yakult when they were kind of semi-competitive a few years ago was the rotation. And, really all those guys are kind of injured and gone. You know, Yoshinori had a good year a few years ago and he's gone. Morinaka is another guy who put together a good season or two. He's no longer around. But they had this guy Kia last night
Is around. He's not effective.
Well, he's just not. He's around the dugout. He's not on the mound.
Yeah, he's been pretty much a fire starter, as I like to call him. He just makes him. You just want to squirt water on him because, you know, he's getting lit up all the time. Reading between the lines, I just when he said the team is inexperienced, not necessarily age wise, it just means that there are a lot of guys that they aren't sure what they're going to be consistently on this level. And some guys have had some limited success, but when it comes down to, they really need positive reinforcement and, you know, of repeated success. And that means, you know, not just doing well, but doing well a number of times and contributing to victories, because they can't blow out their bullpen every weekend or every time they get to the back of the rotation and expect to be competitive in even June, I would say.
Yeah, and remember, Yakult has not gotten their first pick in the draft the last couple of years. They wanted Matsui last year and Fujinami the year before that, and I forget who. Maybe it was Kikuchi a few years ago. So they keep going after these kind of blue chip prospects and just not lucking out in the lottery. So, you know, there may be a little something with their scouting department not having a good plan B in place in the draft. So, you know, hopefully they can correct that, because, you know, you want all six teams to be good.
Yeah, it's better when they're competitive, and obviously, you know, it's so early in the season to start making judgments about teams. I'm not saying that they're going to be bad. They started out a little slow, but they're only three games under 500 at the moment. The team ERA is scary, though. It's over six, and I don't care what time of year we're talking about. That's not good. I mean, the Tigers, their ERA is 5.25. So they're over five, which is bad too. But that team's three games over 500 at the moment. So I guess it's not too much to be concerned with. But we're talking 2 weeks into the season. So there's, the numbers are skewed at the moment. So it's too early to start making decisions. But you would like to see that team, be coming together a little bit better in terms of what they're doing on the mound, and it concerns me. And Millage says he's not worried about the pitching. I am.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens. It's plenty of time.
All right.
Plenty of time to see what happens.
Okay. All right. Well, we have to see what happens with Ballgate 2. We've had another discovery of the balls being higher than the specifications that have been agreed upon by everybody, not just, you know, standards that MPB issues out. But anyway, we heard this past week that the coefficient of restitution, so basically the liveliness of the ball, the MPB is pointing the finger at the maker, Mizuno. I predicted before last time that we had a problem with the ball, that the commissioner would end up leaving his post, and that's what happened. But I think this time around, it's more intriguing because everybody's pointing the finger. We had this crazy new slogan at the beginning of the season called Play New Ball. And, you know, it was a cryptic, goofy English slogan that, you know, MPB unwrapped for this year. And I thought it was weird anyway. But now, this is an absolute farce to have the ball. I mean, you would think the first thing you would do is the new commissioner coming in, and you're replacing a guy who basically left and crawled away in shame because there was an issue with the ball. You would think the first thing you'd do is make sure that the ball is what it's supposed to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, I think it's bad on him and not Mizuno. And my big question is, why didn't they do this test that proved that the ball flew luckily, you know, before they decided to start using it? So I think that Kumazaki should have done these tests that proved the liveliness of the ball before they actually started using it and committed to using it. I think if anyone is at fault, it's the MPB commissioner's office who's tied off on the ball and then realized after you get a 17-10 game and all these other blowouts that that the ball is too lively. And really, you know, there's that aspect to it, and they've just changed so drastically over the last couple of years. And it'd be good to see them just come up with the solution and stick with it. So they're talking about having an open competition among all the different makers and getting Rawlings involved and maybe using the major league regulation ball. So, you know, whatever the response is going to be, I hope that they can commit to it for a couple of years and kind of let the players adjust and play in the new environment that they're creating.
Well, yeah, that's a good idea, and I know that players don't particularly like a lot of change and we having all this fluctuating ball situation, but, you know, like I said, you think that they'd have that settled, and what I heard, I read two reports, and I don't know which one is correct, but that they were doing some tests in the preseason, and everything was fine, and then all of a sudden when they got to the regular season, then they did these tests this first weekend, game two, and they did these tests. Now, I also heard today when I went out and talked to some people with the Eagles that they only took two balls from each stadium, and actually to do the test, they need to put these balls in a machine and fire them out of a machine up against something that's made out of concrete to measure the liveliness. And so you actually destroy the balls. So they get two balls, and they basically smash them up against concrete to measure. And so two balls is from each stadium. I'm not sure that that's enough. And I would bet, based on the way, because I think I talked about it on the show with Jim last week when I talked about the fact that Matt Merton hit this home run to right, and he said it was the wind. The wind probably did play a part in it, but I think what we were seeing was the ball, because some of the guys, I mean, Pena has hit some balls that I didn't think, that even he didn't think seemed to be home runs, and as he's rounding the bases, he's got a surprised look. We've seen a few of these go on this season, so the test run two balls is probably not enough.
It sounds like a lot of fun, though, and I wish they would give me that job.
all you get to do is put them in a machine. If you could throw that fast, you'd be pitching in the major leagues, buddy.
Yeah, well, you know, still destroying baseball. Yeah, there's probably a little more to it than that. I mean, there's some kind of measurement that takes place, I assume.
Right.
For me, and I watched both SoftBank games this weekend, and Uchikawa hit one off the end of his bat and got it to the warning track.
Mm.
So, and that's not a guy that I kind of associate with huge home run power. And, he also squared one up and hit it, to dead center and got it off the top of the wall. And you know, that's a high wall and it's a pretty big center field in Yahoo Dome. So, you know, to his credit though, he looks like he's bulked up quite a bit this off season.
Not that much.
A little bit. I think he looks bigger than he has in the past, but not enough to be hitting opposite field home runs on, you know, a low outside pitch. So yeah, I mean, there's clearly something different about the environment, and you know, I'm just thinking back to 2011 when, you know, I saw Itoi absolutely just perfectly crush a ball to right field and it go for a long out.
Yeah.
So, you know, a couple of years ago, you had to really, really square up the ball to hit it out. And now it's, you know, now you got guys hitting opposite field home runs. And the guy that I feel bad for is, Okawari-kun, because if he was playing with this ball, he'd probably have that record, not Coco. So.
Yeah, Takuya Nakamura with the Save the Lions. Yeah, when he gets back, I think he's salivating right now to get back and play with this ball.
Yeah, I can only imagine he's probably, he's probably got the bat wrapped beside his bed, you know, just like ready to go every morning.
Well, that, and he's probably in the ear of Ehada saying, hey, look, I can pinch hit, I can DH.
Yeah, well, I don't really know if I trust Ehada's decision-making process in any situation, but,
Well, anyway, I really have no idea who's going to end up paying for this. It might, in the end, it might be Mizuno. The commissioner said he didn't issue any changes in the specs. He doesn't know why the ball was changed. The Secretary General, Atsushi Ihara, also was squirming in this press conference that he gave on Wednesday, and he was just at a loss for words as to try to explain it. You know, I don't know, you know, we know that the person who was involved in changing the ball unilaterally, making that decision last season, is still an employee at NPB, although he was demoted. He's still there. Maybe he still has some ties to Mizuno and he did it. Who knows? I don't know what's going to happen. I don't predict anybody losing a job over this one, though.
Well, Kumazaki did it right away this time, you know, and last year, Kato kind of sat on the news until people really started complaining and the union was getting involved and, you know, there were complaints happening and he kind of sat on it until June or July. And this year they came out and admitted it right away. So, you know, he does have that going for him. There's a little bit of accountability going on.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, accountability. We will see what happens. All right. Let's talk about some more PL teams. In fact, on Saturday, there was a great matchup between former Hanamaki Higashi high schoolers, and that was Shohei Ohtani with the Fighters and Yusei Kikuchi in a somewhat of a exciting pitching duel. And the 19-year-old Ohtani got the best of the 22-year-old Yusei Kikuchi. And, you know, I wrote a blog post before the season started about Yusei, and I said he needs to make it happen this year. He was just inconsistent on this day. Now, maybe, you know, he hasn't really been doing great this year. And again, in this game, the same thing that plagued him when he came up, he doesn't throw hard enough to keep people, the bats moving that fast. So he's got to hit spots with his off-speed stuff. And he wasn't hitting spots consistently with the off-speed stuff. So sometimes when he threw it and they were fat pitches, they got good swings. They squared a couple balls up. They didn't always go for hits, but people were hitting him hard. And then he decided to rely on his fastball. They were sitting on that, and he didn't do that well. But that was early on. I mean, he got enough to get through six innings, which is not bad. He had a quality start. But Shohei Ohtani, who wasn't very consistent himself, the two-way guy, he looked inconsistent because he threw 118 pitches in 5 2/3 innings. That's way too many pitches. But he ended up striking out a career-high 10 guys. That 118 pitches, those were a career-high as well. And he looked like he got tired from the third inning on, which is not good because they're resting him before his starts and after his starts. So you think a guy 19 would be able to throw more than three innings without getting tired. Now, I know you didn't really see the game, but what did you think of the numbers?
Well, I did see the highlights, and two things jumped out at me. It's just how similar Ohtani looks on the mound to Yu Darvish. And, you know, maybe it's the build and the number, but he seems to have modeled his mechanics after Darvish, too.
You really I didn't think that. I thought when I heard you say that, I thought the first thing I thought was they kind of move similarly because they're just about the same height, right?
Maybe it's that and the number.
Yeah, they move. They're kind of stiff on the mound. Well, I shouldn't say that about Darvish because he loosened up when he got really good, but he was good when he started. But Ohtani looks a little stiff on the mound. He kind of moves like Frankenstein or Lurch or someone. He's not fluid in his movements on the mound, and maybe that's what it is.
You know, Darvish did modify his mechanics quite a bit over the years, and maybe it was one of the earlier versions of Darvish that I'm thinking of. But maybe it's just the build and the number and the physique and stuff. But two things about his stuff is that he still got the fastball. He was still running it up there into the high 150s, 150 kilometers per hour, which is upper 90s.
Right.
And his slider looked a bit better than I had before in the few times I saw him throw it. Not so much in command, but he's got that big two-plane movement, which if he can really get some consistency with that, it's going to be a valuable pitch I think in his first start of the year, he went through 60 pitches in three innings. So, you know, with pitching, and there's the element of having just the raw physical stuff to do it, but there's also the getting out of jams and being economical with your pitches, which, you know, you hit on with his high pitch count, and all the other little things as a pitcher that you need to be successful. And so with you have this divided attention between Ohtani developing as a batter and developing as a pitcher, that may kind of, I think it will certainly limit his development or slow his development in one way or the other, and sooner or later they're going to have to pick. So it's tough because he's so really talented on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I was talking with a scout today, and they said, yeah, you know, if he's throwing 95, you know, they'd rather see him be a pitcher. And, you know, he's not setting the world on fire as a batter, so he'd be better off as a pitcher. And I said, hey, look, you know, the kid's doing both. He's probably going to do both for the duration of his time here in Japan before he goes to the States. If he gets to play in the National League, eventually if he gets to the major leagues, he'll be able to bat. And so, you know, let him develop those skills now and look at professional pitching and see if that's the route he can go.
Major League scouts see him purely as a pitching prospect. So, you know, that's how they're looking at him. And then if you look at the offensive side of his game, there's still a lot of subtlety to batting that he hasn't picked up on, like drawing walks and getting pitches that he can drive rather than just, relying on kind of crushing the ball and using his physical strength and swinging, skill,
mm-hmm.
bat speed, bat plane. So I think that if he continues to focus on both, there's going to be subtleties on both hitting and pitching that he's not going to be developing. So sooner or later, he's going to have to pick one or the other. I think the conservative approach would be to keep him on the mound, given that, you know, he's throwing 95 plus, he's got a plus slider, he's got the right build for it, the right frame for it. You know, but what he's doing now is kind of legendary. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of unique. And I don't know when we'll see another guy attempt what he's doing and kind of pull it off. So, it's been great watching it. A lot of fun watching him so far.
Yeah, certainly. I think you hit the nail on the head by saying it's legendary because people will talk about it for a while. But the one of the reasons why they're not going to talk about it for too long is because of what else you said, is that he's going to have to pick one. And, you know, I've always claimed he's a better pitching prospect. I talked to the scout who said he's a better, you know, if he's throwing 95, there aren't guys walking around on the street everywhere who could throw 95. So everybody wants him to be a pitcher. But I said, if he's having success, you know, let him do both. And I agree that he'll retard his development in one area. It's probably the pitching, as we can see now. Him getting tired in third inning or struggling to keep runners off base, and he could probably be a lot better if he concentrated on it full time. But just think of it this way. He's a second year pitcher who's getting through games, and he still has never lost a game as a pro. So
well,
I think he's doing all right.
Yeah. Well, think about this. You know, he'd mostly been focusing on pitching in high school, and he seemed like he pitched, he was mostly pitching in spring training his first year. He opened the season as a starting right fielder, playing on turf under lights in a dome, you know, playing every day, facing pitching that's better than he's ever seen before as an 18-year-old kid. And in the first game, he shows up and hits two doubles.
Yep.
And then a few months later, he started a game, you know. So, you know, really, really unbelievable to see 18-year-old prospects on, you know, either position at the MPB level. And he did both and really kind of pulled it off. So,
yeah.
I mean, so definitely an amazing thing to watch.
All right, we'll keep watching him, and we'll also keep an eye on a team that I have picked to play in the Climax Series, and that's the Cebu Lions, and they are off to a sluggish start. Now, I would say they have more staying power than the Chiba-Lotte Marines because of their rotation. But the Lions obviously miss Okawari-kun, who's out with an assortment of issues, but we expect him to come back sometime in May, I think, is the last thing I heard. and maybe before that, but maybe he'll ignite the offense. They're not scoring a lot, and they lost the game today when they scored three runs early. I think it was the first inning or second inning, and they scored three runs, and then they didn't score the rest of the day, and they end up losing 4-3. So in the meantime, I think that that rotation can compete well. I think it's deep. They don't have an ace per se. They're all about the same in terms of what they're going to do for you. Maybe, you know, a lot of guys you expect to go out and put up a quality start. But they're not shutdown guys, and we won't see too many shutouts like we saw Takayuki Kishi put up the other day. Did he put up a shutout? I don't think it was a shutout, but he pitched really well the other day. So, yeah, Kishi pitched a complete game the other day, a 5-2 win. What are you thinking about these Lions, and how can they win on a consistent basis?
Well, so I think it's not just Okoharu-kun that they're missing. I think losing Herman hurts them.
Well, you know, he's gone. He's not coming back, but Okoharu-kun,
well, yeah,
we can expect having lost
Herman, I should say.
Yeah.
And maybe in some ways they're still adding that on top of Nakajima, they're still missing him as well.
True.
So you kind of replace a guy like Herman, who's a known quantity, with a guy like Ransom, who we haven't seen at the MPB level before. And then you have the injuries, so all that stuff compounds on itself. And then the other thing about their lineup is that right now they have a lot of guys slumping. They have Kuriyama's not hitting, Akiyama's not hitting, and those guys are not going to hit like sub 100 over the course of the season. They're gonna get hot, and they're gonna even that out. So the lineup will come back around. And they do have enough starters to keep things interesting. You know, they've got Kishi, who's pretty good. They've got Makita, Nogami,
yeah.
Togame.
Togame is closing for them now, for some reason.
Is he?
Yeah, for some reason he's closing. But Reynolds, the one of the new imports, and he pitched well today. He's pretty good. I think the rotation is deep. I think they can bring five guys who can keep them in the game.
Well, you know, Kikuchi, we touched on Kikuchi earlier, but he was in the middle of a real breakout year last year, and then he hurt his shoulder and was gone for the season. So I wonder if he's still working his way back from that.
Most likely, because I heard that he was injured and he didn't tell anybody, and he tried to pitch through it, and that's why he ended up being out for the season.
That's
possible. He's coming off of that, and he's looking to find his form. That's true.
So in Togame, I mean, I always saw him as a reliever anyway, and he was starting last year and kind of doing okay with it. So I thought, oh, maybe he can handle it. But his delivery, getting high fastball velocity from that delivery really lends itself to relieving more than starting. So they're probably making the right choice with him.
Mm. I'm looking for them to get back and bounce back into this. I don't think they're going to be as far out as we're seeing right now with them not really doing that well. But the SoftBank Hawks, you know, I wanted to say that their start was kind of sluggish, because when I picked them to win the Pacific League, I expected them to just be playing 700 ball the whole season. And I didn't expect them to lose, you know, hardly any games. And it's been kind of a little bit of a shock to see them lose. But they taught Oryx, who was boss in this past weekend.
Yeah, they
series.
Really. I watched both of the last two games, and they really outplayed Oryx both of those games. I think every observer really had SoftBank as the clear favorite in the Pacific League, and then a pretty balanced fight for number two in that league. But you know, they actually have some rotational depth that we haven't seen yet. And they got very little from Terahara last year, who's a guy that I was always really liked.
Never liked him.
Well, so we disagree on that one. I think I'm a little biased towards his high school days.
Oh, okay. I just remember him in the first stint with SoftBank. He was really good, and then he went to Yokohama, and it's hard to judge a guy who goes there. And
no, he was phenomenal for Yokohama.
He pitched well. I'm just saying, it's hard to judge a guy because he pitched well, and then sometimes he'd be a victim of the stadium, and sometimes he'd be a victim of Jingu. I mean, it was hard to pitch sometimes in those stadiums, especially in the heat. And then he's gone back there now, and I don't think he's the pitcher that he was. So
they got very little for him in last year.
Yeah, but. As you said, and that was the thing that I was going to bring up, is that they have starting pitching for days. There are guys we haven't seen yet who could probably break the rotation in other teams, and we haven't even seen them yet. So I think they have the deep. I mean, the matchups that they had over the weekend included, Nakata. Kenichi Nakata was pitching against Chihiro Kaneko, the Oryx ace.
Yeah, and so I watched that whole game, and Nakata really held Oryx at bay, and Kaneko looked pretty good until about the seventh, and then he kind of started to get tired and gave up some hits, and that was enough. So, and then yesterday, Brian Wolf had a good game, and Oryx couldn't really do anything with him the whole game. So, they have a big advantage there.
Yeah, and the thing is those two pitchers, I was talking to somebody today out at the queue, and I said those two guys are really good in domes. Nakata is a really good pitcher in a dome, and Wolf is a really good pitcher in domes. And so to get those two guys and to pitch them in that dome is really a good combination, but I wouldn't throw them outside, you know, when they get into interleague play, I wouldn't put them on the mound at Jinger, either one of them.
Yeah.
That's a recipe for success.
Yeah, Wolf's stuff has clearly taken a step back from where he was a couple years ago, but, you know, he knows how to pitch in MPB now, and, you know, his stuff is still good enough to get by. It's a nice pickup by them.
Yeah, and I'm convinced that, the slogan for the team was basically, if you translate it, is I'm going to get it done, or I'm going to do it. And I think because this team has had its struggles in the past, and it's been talented, it just hasn't been able to get over the hump, especially last year when most of us thought at least they were going to finish in the playoff picture, but maybe win the, I predicted that they would win the title and they didn't. I think they have to have guys step up and say, hey, you know what? I'm not going to let us lose. And I think that's part of why they have that slogan. And, I think we're going to see just more production from some of the top end guys there. I don't think they're going to take their hacks for sure. And they're going to.
Yeah. Well, getting Lee is a really great addition, obviously. And, you know, that's just pure yen power at work there, and you know, SoftBank is a hugely successful corporation.
Yes.
So they basically bought him away from Oryx and outbid any major league offers that he was going to get. And he's a great hitter. He looks like he's gained a few pounds this year, but
I think they issued him a smaller uniform at SoftBank. You laugh.
Is that
I'm
true?
Serious. Yeah, I'm serious. I don't think he's gotten any bigger. He was big. You know, I was on the field with him last year at Save a Dome, and he's just big.
He's always been big, but that gut is really very clearly visible this year.
It was visible last year. I just maybe it just looks different with the pure white uniform. Maybe
that's not the most flattering color for him. But
he kind of looks like Frosty the Snowman running around.
or Santa Claus if we're at that. You know, so he's. But you put him in the middle of the lineup, and you've already got Uchikawa, and you've got Hasegawa, and Matsuda, and some of the other bats they've got there, and that kind of really makes the whole thing go. So they're going to be tough the whole year if they don't screw it up.
Well, we will keep an eye on him. And speaking of screwing stuff up, maybe the Fighters will not keep putting Yuki Saito out there on the mound, and they'll get a clue and get back into this thing. But although they're not playing that poorly, so.
Yeah, I don't know. If he sells tickets, I think that he's always going to get his chances to get himself together. But he's certainly had a rough couple of years, and I've never been much of a fan of his. So, That's about how I feel about that guy.
All right. Well, Patrick, you got through it, man. Thank you very much for stepping in and filling in and doing such a great job.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. And thanks for accommodating my schedule. And I'd definitely love to do it more often. So, whenever the opportunity arises, I'll be here. And next time I won't have a cold, I promise.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to get sick because I never get sick. And I'm not going to let Jim have another procedure. So we'll invite you on to do a threesome. How's that?
Yeah, that would be fun.
All right.
You know, this time, last Monday, my daughter had a fever and she couldn't, and her nose was all congested and she couldn't sleep unless I was holding her upright. And so I caught it from her. And of course she bounced back in a couple of days and I'm still fighting it.
All right. Well, we'll get well soon.
Okay. Well, thanks again for having me and go get some rest.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week. If you have any questions or anything that you want to let us know about, send an email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and you can also leave a note on the Facebook page. Talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.